Well, it's a great honour to speak at the centenary of the 1909 lockout, because the industrial battles of Broken Hill have been an inspiration to people all around the country. And I want to start with something that Lizzie Ahern said, who, like myself, had travelled from Melbourne. She was a member of the Victorian Socialist Party, and she actually was married on the 10th of December 1908 to a local man, Edgar Wallace, who was heavily involved in the union movement. But unlike me, she couldn't just take one day to drive here. She had a long trip. And her photo is in George Dale's classic history of the industrial battles of Broken Hill, if people know that book. And on her marriage certificate, she described herself as a socialist agitator. And she spoke at a mass meeting on the 1st of November 1908, because anyone that knows much about the time will know that the workers were preparing for several months. They knew there was going to be a confrontation because the mine owners wanted to reduce their living standards. And she said, "The men on the barrier who produce all the good things enjoyed by the mine owners have to work with the daily risk of being brought home to their loved ones dead." And it's very relevant still today what Lizzie said. In the 8 months last year, 5 workers were killed on the BHP Billiton mines. There's been virtually no publicity about it, and the Rudd Labor government is refusing to guarantee that their loved ones and the unions will have access to the outcome of this inquiry into these industrial murders. And so I think the centenary celebration isn't just about the past. It's about the fact that the class struggle remains just as relevant today as it did then. And as I said, the battles in Broken Hill have always been an inspiration to people who have had to defend their rights as trade unionists. And in particular, what I want to just mention is the role of the women, because Broken Hill had a great tradition of the women being involved in what was really an almost all-male trade union movement because of the mining workforce. And it's a history that was ignored by most Labor historians, and then it was trivialised, in my opinion, by a lot of feminist history, where people said, well, the women were only seen as an auxiliary. And the women played a very important role. My research took me through 1892 to 1909 and the anti-conscription campaigns of 1916 and 1917. And in every one of them, the women mobilised in quite large numbers, often being more militant than the men, demanding that men, you know, stand firm when they looked like they were going to give in, demanding in 1916 that the men take the Saturday afternoon and get shorter hours, which was the other campaign going on. And their role is immortalised in a painting that a lot of you might know. Well, I hope people know it. It used to be in Pride of Place in the art gallery when I first came here in the early 90s. And now I'm told it's in the foyer at the City Council chambers, if you haven't seen it. It's called United We Stand by Clark Barrett and Howard Steer. And as the male miners are holding back the police, the women are behind tarring and feathering the scabs. And this was an image very much associated with the 1892 dispute, but nevertheless the women were always in the forefront of, you know, standing up to people who scabbed and broke solidarity against the mine owners' attempts to attack workers' conditions. And women coming to the city were always popular as orators. I don't know whether people know, but Adela Pankhurst, the famous suffragette from Britain, came here during the First World War and was loved as an orator at all kinds of workers' mass meetings in the campaign against conscription. Another woman that visited here was Bella Lavender, who was well known in the union movement in Victoria in particular, but she was famous for being the first woman who ever graduated from a university. She came through Melbourne University. And, you know, women would come and they would be so welcomed as orators amongst the all-male workforce and their families. So if we come to 1909, the Barrier Truth Women's League mobilised thousands of women. There was only about 21 of them at the beginning of the dispute. because there had been a period where the unions had been a bit demoralised, and they were urged on by Tom Mann, the popular British trade union organiser, who was asked to come here and help prepare for the coming confrontation. And he urged the women to get all of the men in their families to join the union. He understood the role that women could play in the workers' movement. And he urged them to attend the rallies and all the mass meetings, which they did with great gusto at times. They turned up in big numbers to the mass meeting before the picketing began on Friday the 1st of January. And they're said to have conspicuously held up their hands very high to participate in the union vote, which they weren't members of the union, obviously, but they insisted they be allowed to vote for the action that was coming. And this was the result of months of organising since Tom Mann arrived, where he addressed the Women's League meeting on the 14th of October, where they resolved to stand by the men, and not just out of loyalty to the men, but because they wanted to participate in resisting attempts to lower their living standards. They asked or demanded that the combined trade unions produce a badge that everyone was to wear, both men and women, and anyone found not wearing it in the town during the dispute could be challenged by the Women's League members. The women, as I said, attended rallies, pickets, mass meetings. They helped organise a children's Sunday school that organised the children to participate in the dispute. The woman from the ABC here was asking me about scabs, and from my memory, the children, they probably weren't organised to do this, but they used to go with rocks and throw them on the tin roofs of the houses of the scabs to annoy them. One of the things that they really featured in was the demonstrations that were constant outside the jail when Tom Mann and other men were arrested and they were held in the jail. A woman called Mrs. Nolan was conspicuous for flying the red flag, which is featured up at the Miners' Memorial. The red flag is not Mrs. Nolan. And the women played an important role in trying to intimidate and isolate the police that were brought here from Sydney. In the press of the time, it was said that on the night of the arrests, the 9th of January, the women responded with backhanders and spitting, and one young woman ignored a demand of a police officer to come over to him and said, "Go back to Sussex Street, you plague rat." So you get a sense of the role the women were prepared to play. Mrs. Gibson, who has her photo featured in the library at the moment, I notice, a lovely photo of Mrs. Gibson. She spent a month in jail because she was convicted of insulting language to the police officer. And again, her time in jail was accompanied by constant rallies. And so Broken Hill has a proud tradition of working class struggle, and in particular of solidarity between both men and women. And I'll just finish with Lizzie Ahern again, who outside the jail on the 3rd of February said, "They must win this fight, and they're going to do so, whatever it might cost." And I think this summed up the spirit of the whole dispute, of the determination and sacrifice that people were prepared to go through in order to try to defend their living standards. And there was a movement that has, as I said, inspired people. It's one of the reasons I'm here from Melbourne. I was inspired by reading about the traditions of the workers in Broken Hill, and people that I knew had, in particular Mick Armstrong, that's done a lot of research here, brought me here to experience Broken Hill, the industrial centre where, we should know about the working class history. And I think there's still a history, and it's still an inspiration. It's no better time to remember these disputes, to learn lessons from them, and to take courage from them, because we're facing another world economic crisis in which immediately the employers, all the bosses, are demanding that workers take lower living standards. We've seen mines close here already and everywhere, and what happens to people when they're on the dole? There's no talk of putting the dole up or of providing a living wage for people who, through no fault of our own, are all going to be unemployed because of the free market, because of the capitalists and their profit-driven system. And And so, you know, I think that it's no better time to pay tribute to the workers, both men and women, of Broken Hill in particular in 1909, and the determination and the sacrifice and the solidarity that they demonstrated, and which stands as an inspiration and possibly an inspiration we're going to have to draw on in the coming years. And so it's thank you so much for asking me to be here, Roslyn, and the opportunity to be the one to represent this history of the women. It is so inspiring.